There are new U.S. Labor Department regulations and standards that are going to require federal contractors, of which there are nearly 50,000 companies with approximately 200,000 establishments, to set a new target of having 7% of their workforce be comprised of employees with disabilities. There's a call for colleges and universities to do more to adequately prepare students with the disabilities for the workforce, because the current statistics show really they're not prepared or not prepared enough. Today, RIT being honored as a good example of what a university can do in this arena. The National Organization on Disability has been hosting events today. There was a news conference today in conjunction with an annual career fair, which we'll tell you about in just a moment here. We should also tell you that this part of our program today is part of Move to Include, WXXI working with a number of community partners to promote inclusion for people with disabilities on every level in our community. We'd appreciate it if you could click on the link at WXXI.org/include and take a moment to share your thoughts and ideas. We'd like to hear from you. Move to Include is funded in part by the Golisano Foundation. Here joining us to talk about this issue and what we all can learn from it, Alan Muir. Alan's the founder and executive director of Career Opportunities for Students with Disabilities. Alan, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And also here, Carol Glazer, the president of the National Organization on Disability. Carol, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Evan.
And I know you've come from sort of far afield to be here today. So let me first start and ask why RIT in our community? Let me ask Alan. You've been working with RIT today. Why RIT?
Well, RIT has been a longtime partner of Career Opportunities for Students with Disabilities, COSD, and they are one of the major models out there of doing the right way of preparing students, of having the connection between career services and disability services. And they have the special emphasis on deafness, so they bring that part in as well, of having, you know, the specialty type disability, but also they have a lot of other students with other types of disabilities. So they're looking at this in a very holistic manner, and we like that as a means of having as an example for other schools to follow. And that's what our organization is all about, is making sure that we have as many campuses around the country following a lot of their leads, as well as a couple of other schools.
Now, you're honoring RIT because of what they're doing well, but if you look across the country, what are our universities not doing? When you talk about students who are not prepared to enter a workforce, students with disabilities,
yes,
give me a sense for the landscape.
Well, I think there's 1.4 million students that we know of with disabilities on campuses nationwide right now. And there's still a 46% unemployment rate among college graduates with disabilities. So there's the disconnect that's a lot of different areas, but one thing that COSD particularly attacks is making sure that the preparation of the student is at the maximum that we can do. And just making sure that there is that full employment of all resources on campus to assist the student to be as well prepared as possible. And we're working on the supply side to make sure that, you know, folks that are going to be recruited by these great employers who are at RIT today and at other places will be finding the best candidates.
Carol, let me ask you about these new regulations, the U.S. Labor Department regulations. What should employers know? And frankly, what should we all know about the way that part of the landscape is changing?
Well, let's look at history to begin with. And if we think of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 as groundbreaking legislation preventing discrimination, in this case of racial and ethnic minorities. And you look at the fact the numbers are on employment with those populations really didn't change until a good 10 years later with the advent of affirmative action. And you can see the ADA in a similar light. 1990, preventing discrimination against people with disabilities. But according to our polls, NOD has been polling using the firm of Harris Interactive since 1986. The employment numbers for people with disabilities have not changed since well before the ADA. So something more had to be done in order to encourage and incentivize employers to hire people with disabilities rather than just simply not discriminate. And last year, the Department of Labor stepped up, played a leadership role, moved into that void, and is now requiring federal contractors to set a goal. It's not a quota. It's not a requirement. It's a workforce goal. But what's important to note is that that 7% workforce goal applies to every single job category in every single company that does business with the federal government. And those companies employ 25% of the nation's workforce. So we could, as a country, this could create 600,000 new jobs for people with disabilities in the first year alone if contractors are going to meet the goal.
And I know you've heard the question or the argument that says it's not that the jobs aren't there, it's that you have to have qualified candidates. And what we're hearing is that there are people who could be qualified candidates with either the proper training, better skills coming out of universities, and or frankly, employers willing to hire them. I mean, I'm certainly there are probably employers who might not think that they're discriminating or might just be thinking that I've got to hire what I think is the best worker available and they may be missing candidates who would be qualified.
That's right.
It's all about sourcing and finding the right sources out there of talent. And now with this regulation that you're referring to, it's Section 503, that has been a great incentive for employers to be able to go and look at different sources that they had not considered before and looking for students with disabilities.
So, there are so many ways.
Oh, go ahead.
There are so many ways that employers might inadvertently screen out job seekers with disabilities, even though they have the best of intentions. Some of that has to do simply with the way they portray themselves in their job ads, in the media, on their websites. Do they come off as disability-friendly employers? If I'm a person with a disability and I'm looking at that company, I'm going to look on their website to see if I can find people who have disabilities, and that's going to tell me that's a company that's disability-friendly. You can inadvertently screen out job seekers with disabilities in the way that you word your job descriptions and the experience requirements you look for. If you're looking for 10 years of experience in a position and you're looking to a workforce that has historically been not inclusive of people with disabilities, might you not think, well, let's see, can 10 years navigating the streets of New York City in a wheelchair, can that qualify as having some pretty good experience, even though it's not experienced directly in the workforce? So it's everything from how you portray yourself as a company, and does that encourage people to come forward and disclose their disabilities when they have them, all the way to how you might be inadvertently screening people out just by the way you phrase your job descriptions.
We're talking to Alan Muir, the founder and the executive director of Career Opportunities for Students with Disabilities, and Carol Glazer, the president of the National Organization on Disability. Alan, you wanted to weigh in on that last point as well?
Yeah, I just wanted to make one last point, and again, to bring it back to students and preparation. There are so many different skills, as Carol mentioned. Problem-solving skills is the biggest one for people with disabilities, and I think that that's where we are constantly encouraging post-secondary institutions to be finding the best ways of bringing those skills out of students and being able to have them tell their story about that. Employers need to hear that because that's what they're looking for. They're looking for problem-solving skills. They're looking for a different perspective to different issues that most of the rest of us probably wouldn't have in the same way. So all of that is a big component of making sure that student will be very much available and ready and competitive.
And how, if there's a gap or a perceived gap in problem-solving skills, when it comes to workers or potential workers with disabilities, how do you deal with, how do you correct that, how do you train for that and educate for that?
Well, it's really their own innate problem-solving skills, just from being able to, as Carol mentioned, just to navigate in everyday life. For me, I'm a person of very short stature, and so I make decisions every day about how I'm going to get into things or get into buildings, get into places. And so those decisions are very calculated, but I don't think about them because they become second nature to me. Other folks with disabilities have the same idea. So if you help them break that down and then show that to employers, they're going to be like, okay, I can use that skill. That's something I really need from you that's going to help my workplace.
We also want to mention that if you have a business in the area and would consider hiring a deaf or a hard of hearing student for either a 10-week co-op or for permanent employment, RIT has the national RIT's National Technical Institute of the Deaf, NTID, hosting its own job fair. That's coming up on Wednesday, October 29th at NTID. Wednesday, October 29th at NTID. Students and recent graduates who study business, computing, engineering, science, visual communications, and liberal arts will be attending. And for more information, you can contact the NTID Center on Employment. That number is 585-475-6219. 585-475-6219. Again, that's coming up on October 29th. Now, Alan and Carol, when it comes to the number of 7%, I don't know if employers think that that is a high mountain to climb. I don't know where the numbers are right now. Is there an average? Is it anywhere close to 7%?
Employers aren't really counting.
Right,
will be required to under the new regulation. But the anecdotal information that we get tells us that employers think they have about 3% of their workforce as people with disabilities. We at NOD believe that number is likely far higher. Mm-hmm. But some of this is simply the fact that people are afraid to disclose. There's a stigma around disability. Mm-hmm. What will my coworkers think? Will people think I'm going to be as productive? Will my boss worry about absenteeism? But employers who have taken those first steps, Evan, you asked about what is it about this whole issue that gives employers pause, and might they worry about problem-solving skills? Those employers who have taken those first steps, and it's not hard to hire people. This isn't really that big of a deal. You do it all the time. Sometimes you do it well, sometimes you don't. But employers who have taken those first steps and brought people with disabilities, a range of disabilities, into their workforce, have in fact seen that, just as Alan said, those unique problem-solving skills, navigating a world that isn't built for you, mm-hmm. can be trained toward higher productivity in the workforce, less absenteeism, greater loyalty, higher retention rates. So just taking that first step is often all that's needed.
What is the unemployment rate for people with disabilities now, and how does it compare historically?
Only about 20% of all working age Americans with disabilities is currently in the workforce. And that number hasn't really changed much, certainly since before NOD started polling in 1986, 4 years before the ADA.
How could we have nearly 30 years without much progress on this? It's really remarkable.
Well, if you think about the whole history of the way that we as a society have dealt with disability in this country, we still have a very long ways to go. I have a son who is developmentally and physically disabled. Had he been born 20 years before he was born, I would have had to send him away to an institution. That was the accepted mode of dealing with people with developmental disabilities, mm-hmm. Not very, very long ago. So we still have a ways to go as a society in acknowledging that this is a very high, 1 in 5 Americans has a disability. That number is going to grow as my generation of baby boomers ages into disability. But as a society, we're going to have to get very smart very quickly.
Is it about simply not, for employers, who may not think that they are discriminating, but they make assumptions about what people are capable of? And Alan, you talked about your own stature. Have people misjudged you over the years?
Oh, yes, they have. And I think it all is based on how comfortable you are with your own skin as to whether...
But that can be tough, right?
It is extremely tough. And that's one of the reasons why we are working so hard to help students really gain that level of confidence. And, you know, we do an event that actually brings together about 60 students and recent grads with disabilities to meet with 11 employers for 2 half-days of networking. And we do this twice a year. And it's a great way for employers and for students to really get to be comfortable with one another.
Again, if you want to attend an event coming up here, if you've got a business in the area or you know someone who does and you want to learn more, you'd consider hiring a deaf or hard of hearing student for either a 10-week co-op or permanent employment, RIT's National Technical Institute for the Deaf is hosting its own job fair. That's coming up at the end of this month, 4 weeks from today, Wednesday, October 29th at NTID, if you want to check that out. And, you know, are there a lot of opportunities? Are we seeing growing opportunities for businesses and employers to sort of learn more about how this all works?
Mm-hmm. I think so. We're between NOD's work and what we do at COSD, and we're out there and we're constantly pushing the process of how we can get more employers engaged. And that was the part of the event that I was mentioning earlier. Yeah. We do those all around the country, and bringing those students together and the employers together, it changes the whole concept from the time that the student arrives. They're still like the deer in the headlights look. And then by the time they leave, they can't wait to go back to their home university and tell everybody who they met that weekend. It's a tremendously life-changing experience for those students.
And speaking of employers, I've got a call from Keith. I know Keith in Farmington is an employer himself, and Keith's on the line. Thanks for calling, Keith.
How you doing? Just comment and a question. Personally, I hope it never does happen, but you ever see a time where we're going to have obesity as a protected status under ADA? Because if we are, I think we're doomed as a nation. And as a comment, I went to a deaf wedding once, and it was very heartwarming because this was a person from North America marrying somebody from South America. So you had sign people from ALS Spanish to English. You had such an eclectic mix of human beings, black people with white people with Asian people, Asian people with Indian people, and
That's
so on
great.
And so forth. But their commonality was their deafness. It was a very, very eclectic, heartwarming event.
Diversity on steroids.
Yeah, absolutely. Keith, thanks for the call. What an interesting image that is.
Yeah.
And, you know, he asked if obesity, I don't know the status of that. Carol, obesity is a status disability? No?
No.
Okay. Let's get some closing thoughts here from Carol and Alan. If people have questions about where resources are, about these new regulations and new sort of standards and the goal of the U.S. Labor Department, or anything else you want them to know, I'll start with you, Carol. Where do you want them to go? What
go
do you want them
to know? NOD.org, and I would remind your listeners that we are here today in Rochester as a call to action to America's universities, because as much as employers have to take steps forward, so do universities in order to be able to help them source candidates. And again, look at what Rochester has done. We've just issued a white paper called Bridging the Gap. It's on our website, NOD.org, and we'd encourage your readers to look at it for some very helpful tips, your listeners, that
yep.
is.
Yep, Alan?
Well, I think COSDonline.org is my organization's website, and it really is geared to students and to professionals, to employers and to higher education professionals as well. We have our annual conference that's coming up in Philadelphia on November 20th, and then follow that with one of our student events that will be there also. So I think we... you know, and particularly in concert with NOD, I think we'll be a good force to really help both ends, the students and the employers, to get to the goal of what we're talking about today.
Alan Muir from the Career Opportunities for Students with Disabilities. He's the founder and executive director. Alan, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Carol Glazer, the president of the National Organization on Disability. Thank you, Carol, for being
thank
here.
Thank you.
And a reminder to our listeners, this part of the program has been part of Move to Include, WXXI working with a number of community partners to promote inclusion for people with disabilities on every level in our community. We'd appreciate it if you want to join the conversation or share some feedback with us at WXXI.org/include and take a moment to share your thoughts and ideas. We'd love to hear from you. Move to Include is funded in part by the Golisano Foundation.